And with that, we will have the roll call.
Leroy Brady.
Here.
Jason Foose.
Present.
William Greenslade.
Here.
Robert Stanley. Edward Marley.
Here.
Peter Leeds.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. At this time, we will go for call to the public pursuant to ARS 31-431.01H. The committee members are not allowed to discuss or take action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. So at this time, do we have anyone from the public who would like to address the committee? Okay, then we will go to adoption of minutes. For approval of the February 21st, 2017 LNR committee minutes.
I move we approve the minutes as written.
Second. That's it.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Those in favor of approving the minutes as read, please say aye.
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 I abstain.
Any opposed? Minutes approved. So we are at item number five, review, discussion, and possible action on the following. A is AZBTR, substantive policy statement 17, whether acting as an expert witness constitutes engineering practice under Arizona statutes. Issue 1024-2017. So,
Mr. Chair,
yes.
By way of brief explanation, this issue comes before the committee today at the request of the Attorney General's office. As you know from the materials in the packet, the board issued this substantive policy statement back in October of 2017 as a result of a request from Arizona Department of Transportation in connection with some litigation that the Attorney General's Office Transportation Section was engaged in at the time. And the board discussed the issue about whether someone coming from out of state who was not licensed in Arizona could give what was considered expert testimony on engineering practice in Arizona without being registered. And after review at the October board meeting, the board obviously spent a fair amount of time looking at the definition of engineering practice and determined that that definition did apply to someone coming from out of state to give expert testimony. So hence the substantive policy statement was issued. And now the AG's office would like us to revisit the issue.
Well, and additionally, the board at the meeting did ask that the Law Review Committee take a look at this. There was a question with the board. It took them quite a bit of struggling to reach a decision in it, and they wanted it to come back to the committee to take a look at it and give a recommendation back to the board. Now, I do I certainly could give some legal advice if the committee would like, or if the committee would like to look at it first, discuss it. If there are any questions that the committee has.
Well, Mr. Green said, my reading of this is that, I would concur with the language in the statute. It seems to imply that expert testimony is, in fact, engineering practice or practice under the statute. At the same time, in reading the deliberations of the board, I can appreciate the difficulty in actually applying it, rather than the fact that the statute seems to support it, or the policy supports the statute, I think there's a lot of other issues associated with this that are legitimate questions, and I personally haven't reached a decision on this. I think it is a tough issue because we have people that are coming in from out of state that perhaps have specific talents or specific knowledge or experience that the court would benefit from, and to not allow them to testify seems to be, to me at least, to be a problem for the courts. So maybe the AG's office does have something to say to us that would help us with this, or at least me anyway.
Well, I would be happy to provide legal advice concerning cases that may be pertinent to this. Additionally, I don't know if the committee is familiar with what a substantive policy statement is as opposed to a rule or as opposed to a statute. The committee is familiar with substantive policy statements?
Yes. I'd like to hear your definition. This is Jason Foos.
Oh, certainly, Jason. Well, essentially what a substantive policy statement does is clarify for a consumer or a member of the public what a statute says. It gives the board's interpretation of its statute to the public so that if there is a question, like, for example, whether an expert witness whether that constitutes a practice of a regulated profession, that provides the public notice that the board is interpreting its statute as meaning that. Now, the issue with the substantive policy statement is it can only clarify. It can't create regulation. That would be through a statute or possibly a change in a rule. But the board can't create regulation where there isn't any to begin with. So the question is whether the board is clarifying an area that they do have the authority to regulate, or whether the board is creating a regulation that doesn't otherwise exist, which would normally be more the area of a statute or a rule.
Scott, if I can ask you, what is your opinion on that question? What has the board done? Have they created a new rule or not?
Thank you, Jason. I can offer the committee legal advice if the committee would like to. The committee is certainly capable of moving into executive session for legal advice. I would be happy to offer legal advice at that point. I don't know that when it comes to offering opinions, I'm a little limited, but in terms of offering legal advice, I'll be more than happy to do that if you would like.
Can I ask another question?
Certainly.
What would happen if a witness in a proceeding that was not licensed in Arizona a complaint was filed and that came to the board? Would the board, based on this substantive policy statement, be in a position of then disciplining this registrant for practice in the state of Arizona without a license?
Yes.
Has there been such a case?
Not to the best of my knowledge.
Jason, were you at the October meeting?
I was not.
Jason Foos was, yes.
Maybe you could tell the other committee members your memory and what, you know, what you recall about this situation.
Well, I think the overlying theme that I remember and the point that ADOT, the ADOT representative, focused on was the fact that road construction is very geographically specific. I don't really know that much about it, but materials are native, or the use of native materials and the things that we do in Arizona are very specific to Arizona, and the scenario that ADOT has come up against as they attempt to protect the public's money is expert witnesses from out of state convincing a jury that, pick a state, Florida, Louisiana, wherever, that those standards of care are better than what we have in Arizona, and they in turn end up putting swaying a jury to believe that whatever techniques and tax bases and things that they implement in another state seem to be a better solution here in Arizona than what we currently use as our local standards of care. So that's the biggest point that I can recall from ADOT's presentation that would support having, you know, narrowing the expert witness pool to license registrants in Arizona. Conversely, in the conversations, there were some thoughts about, you know, engineering a box culvert might be the same in every state. It's you know, it's a width, it's a length, it's a height, it's a material type, it's a standard drawing. So in those cases, not all engineering may be dependent on specific local knowledge. So I think that was part of the things that we struggled with at that meeting.
This is Ed. I have a question, since I wasn't there to have the privilege of the firsthand view of the discussion. I'm looking at the minutes that are included in our packet, and it says Dr. Angel stated he would be in favor of adoption if he was guaranteed that Legislation and Rules Committee reviewed the results of the adoption in the future. And I guess I'm thinking this was adopted back in October. I mean, we're four months in. Do we have any results to review at this point? It almost like, the way I interpret what I'm reading is that let's take a wait-and-see attitude and see is this causing serious problems, or isn't it? And so I guess I'm wondering, are we a little premature in discussing it this early in?
This is Jason. Ed, you make a great point. I did make the comment at that meeting that if we've done something that's not correct here or in the best interest of everybody, I suppose, that we'll find out. And so I think there is a little bit of support for your wait-and-see attitude. Or comment, I should say, not attitude. I'm sorry.
At this point, do we
have a bad
legal
attitude.
Advice?
Probably.
Can I have a motion that we go into session for legal advice?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I make that motion.
Okay, we have to disconnect Michelle as well.
All right, let's see how I figure that out.
I have a motion to second.
I'll second it, yes.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. I can...
Aye.
Sorry. I can hang up.
Okay, when we're done, I'll give you a call back, Michelle, okay?
Okay, thanks so much, Kurt. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
And I'll go and catch you guys afterwards.
That's fine.
And let me now turn off the... All right. Ed, Jason, I'm going to put you on hold so I can call Michelle again.
Okie doke.
Hello, Michelle.
Hey, Michelle, it's Kurt. I'm going to get you back in the meeting, okay?
Okay, thank you so much, Kurt.
And
Ed, you there?
I am.
Jason, you there?
Yes.
Michelle, you there?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Okay, the Legislative and Rules Committee is back in session. And our public are back also. Let's open it up for discussion.
Well, this is Mr. Green. It seems to me that based on the legal advice that we've had, issuing policy statement, substantive policy statement, opens the board to potential litigation. And it seems that under that situation, it's something that we can't recommend that the board proceed with. And so it seems to me that the recommendation of the Legislative Rules Committee would be that the substantive policy statement, at least as currently written, be rejected. Is that the right word? Be rescinded.
Rescinded.
This is Ed Marley. I would tend to agree with Mr. Greenslade. What I'm hearing is that we're kind of putting the courts in an awkward position, because if the court is a kind of accepting the credential of an expert witness, and they're not registered here, they're basically causing someone potentially to break the law or our rules and statutes. And I think, the way to kind of answer the question of the particular nature of this geographic region playing into that, that's part of what goes on in a court proceeding, is the jury decides who is the more believable expert, because there's going to be an expert on both sides. And if somebody comes in and they're not that knowledgeable of the geography or geology of the region, then they are going to be, maybe their testimony is held in lower esteem than that person who comes in and knows their stuff, so to speak. So I would really recommend that we send this back to the full board for reconsideration.
Mr. Leeds, I agree this is an overreach. I do believe that the court process itself should determine whether or not an engineer is qualified to be an expert witness or an architect or otherwise.
Can I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we send this substantive policy statement back to the full board for reconsideration.
Second?
I'd like to...
Second by Foose.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to modify that motion. It seems to me that the board shouldn't just reconsider it. I think the board needs to rescind it, given the fact that... the opinion that we've had is that it opens the board to litigation under the current rulings of the Supreme Court. So my view is that the recommendation ought to be a bit stronger than just reconsideration.
I think that's a great suggestion, Mr. Greenslade. This is Ed Marley. I would modify my motion to refer it back to the board for reconsideration and rescission or rescinding of the whatever kind of word you use. of the substantive policy statement.
Foose will second that.
Thank you, Mr. Foose. Those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you, gentlemen. Okay, let's go to Item B, submitted question regarding architects stamping previously reviewed shop drawings.
May I suggest also that we do have a gentleman here waiting for 5F, I believe?
5.
Okay, I'm in no hurry.
Oh. Just making you guys aware.
Yes, thank you. Today,
yes, thank you.
Thank you for noting that.
Yes. Sat here and looked at it. Let's go to item number F. Submitted question regarding designers of engineering systems licensure.
And he has submitted to me some documentation that go along with this. I'm not passing it to you guys.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mark Haberman. I am the owner of Haberman Electrical Designs here. I have a small engineering firm out of my house in Litchfield Park. I used to have a bigger firm, but what I'm proposing for discussion is the adoption of a licensing of designers of engineering systems similar to what's in the state of Wisconsin. It fills a gap, basically, between the rules of what doesn't require to be stamped and the full requirement of what requires a professional engineer to be stamping. This is limited to the specializations of HVAC systems, plumbing systems, private sewer systems, fire protection systems, and electrical systems, particularly for building construction. I've taken most of everything that I've had to offer from the state of Wisconsin for you to look at, you know, and use for consideration to maybe mimic something similar. I don't think that, going back to something that I heard before, that it's that state's better than our state. I don't want to say anything along those lines, but I think it's something that's needed. Basically, an applicant would have to work under the supervision of a professional engineer in these particular disciplines for a minimum of 7 years. If they're under, and take an exam after 7 years, and then they would be granted a license to offer their services to the public. If they were over 35 years old and had more than 12 years of experience, they could skip the exam and still be granted a license to offer their services to the public. As somebody who's been in the business for 30 years, I can kind of attest that it's a technical skill level, not necessarily a professional skill level, and that within those years of experience, I believe I've kind of earned the right to offer my services to the public. And I think it's something that we should have a discussion on.
Can I ask you a question, sir?
Sure, please do. I'm very nervous.
Are you licensed in Wisconsin under
No.
this designation?
I am not.
Okay. Are you aware if there is a special license test, an exam that Wisconsin offers?
Yes.
They do?
Yes, they do.
Is it their own state exam or is it an NCWS exam?
No, I have no idea.
Okay.
That was something you'd have to contact Wisconsin that I could do if you'd like
okay.
to do so to further the discussion. But I assume they're basically code-type exams
okay.
for various disciplines. Whether they're open book or closed book, I don't know that I could answer that.
Yeah. I ask because traditionally this board has required the national exams for specialty designations. So creating its own exam for this specific designation would be really expensive.
It's possible that Wisconsin would be happy to share, thereby reducing or even eliminating the cost. Most of the codes that we use in those disciplines are all national codes anyway.
Okay.
So,
okay.
That helps.
Thank you. I just thought for the member discussion.
Sure.
It'd be good to know.
Sure.
This is Ed Marley, Mr. Chair. I think in the, I can see the there's probably a potential need for something like this, but in the current government atmosphere of deregulation, and this more than likely requiring a statute change, I think it'd be a tough uphill battle to get something like this approved.
I tend to agree. I did approach some people in the legislature about 10 years ago about this, and you can imagine what they told me.
And it would only be worse now, probably.
Well, that's possible.
I
would argue the point that it's a public safety need. There are a lot of people like me out there who are offering their services to the public and using a paid employee. This would put the public safety, the liability, and responsibility back on the design professional. And I think the legislature would buy off on the fact that it would create a lot of jobs. We're talking thousands of new technical jobs that would be created by this. Just to throw my 2 cents out there.
Okay.
I think if you use the word jobs, they would probably perk up an ear.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
My recollection during the time that I was on the board was that there was a group of professionals, hydrologists actually, that were interested in similarly being registered. It was made clear at the time that if hydrologists wished to, you know, to be part of a registration process, it was up to them to convince the legislature, not the board, that the board wasn't in the position of acting as advocate for regulating any particular profession, that it was really up to the legislature to make that decision, and it was up to those folks that wanted to be registered or felt that it was an important aspect of protecting public health and safety that that these people were able to make that point to the legislature. And I understand you've tried this in the past, and I can appreciate how difficult it is, and I would just second Mr. Marley's comments regarding the current regulatory atmosphere, which is more focused on deregulating professions or occupations, not adding more.
Okay. How now, when people want to do this designation, sir, do they can do it if they're an electrical or a mechanical or a fire protection engineer, right?
Well, electrical or mechanical, yes.
Electrical
fire
or mechanical.
Fire protection is usually NICET with their own certifications. Most of the municipalities will allow a NICET 3 to do sprinkler systems or fire alarm systems. But because of the rules of the state board now for what a non-registrant can do, they're really very restrictive to tiny little TIs or,
okay,
you know, some things like that. That, you know, I'd have to go back to school and learn differential equations and calculus and things that I don't use in my day-to-day life.
What about the designation control systems? We do license control systems engineers.
Yes, and home inspectors as well.
And home inspectors, exactly.
So there's a precedent already there for what I'm asking for. It's very similar.
Mr. Haberman, I want to thank you for all the effort you put into this.
You're welcome. I'm being as enthusiastic as I could.
A lot of effort, a lot of research. I'm not sure this is the right forum to be sitting in front of, though, to be honest with you. I believe this type of stuff should come from the legislation, from the government.
Well, I have definitely tried to reach out to my local senator and congressman or representative, and I'm going to continue to do that, but I was at least had to hope that, you know, with some backing or recommendation from this committee to the legislature's, whatever board it is, that it takes care of the BTR, you know, that would go a long way into helping. You know, me by myself, I'm nothing, but the board itself, at least this committee, at least having their support behind it. But if you can't be an advocate, I understand that as well.
Well, if I may, I am an advocate for you.
But as an individual.
Right. Being a home inspector, we didn't get certified until everybody else told us we had to. Okay, so I'm a little confused as to why you want to come in here to get certified on the one hand. On the other hand, I do understand your position here, and I don't think that we should be the ones that actually put this forward.
Okay. We can always come and be supportive, and we often provide information to legislators when they're proposing different types of bills. So it's not something that we need to be excluded from. It's just not something the legislature wants to hear from us at this point.
Well, I most certainly know quite a few designers, and most of the architects and engineers that I've posed this question to are very supportive of it. So I could probably get quite a few signatures of voters.
Who is your representative? Do you know?
Senator is Martin Quezada, and I forget my representative's name. He's pretty new, so I don't know him off the top of my head.
And Mr. Quezada is a Democrat? Mm-hmm. That's why we need a Republican, probably, who would favor this. But he's a good representative.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you for the information.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for letting me sit in. It was interesting to say the least.
Good.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Appreciate you coming and making us aware of this.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Good.
Thanks for pushing me up front, too. I appreciate that. Have a great day, everyone.
You too.
Thank you. We will now go to item B. Question regarding architect stamping previously reviewed shop drawings.
As you can see, our esteemed member Neil sent this to us some time ago. I do love...
Can we just put it off again?
It did appear on an earlier agenda for this committee, I know, but...
Yeah, we probably should deal with it today.
Okay. What do you think, Ed?
You know what? I stamp the same shop drawings that a lot of my consultants deal. We are the overall registrant of record for the entire project.
Okay.
With them being responsible, obviously, for their disciplines, but ultimately, when something goes wrong, whether it's architectural, mechanical, electrical, civil, structural, whatever, I'm the front line.
Yeah.
And so I see no problem with, you know, I don't think it's a board issue, quite frankly, because it's just, it's shop drawings. We don't seal shop drawings. We put a review stamp on it. And I think it's up to each individual registrant's discretion whether they want to or not.
Okay.
I do it. And I do it for exactly what Neil says he's doing, you know, whether it's maybe a set of, say, stair shop drawings that structural would review for compliance with the structural drawings. I would review on the architectural basis to make sure that it meets the code requirements, it meets the aesthetic requirements that I've outlined in my construction documents, and I would affix my shop drawing stamp to it as well. So I think it's kind of a non-issue.
So you have a special shop drawing stamp?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's got all kinds of legal mumbo-jumbo on it that probably doesn't mean anything in a court of law.
Okay. So, and when we say shop drawing, it's distinguished from final stamp.
It's distinguished from a professional document. A shop drawing is prepared by literally a shop. It's by a steel fabricator or a millwork fabricator. They're drawings that they use to put the stuff together that I've drawn in my drawings.
Okay.
And in the case of like stairs, a lot of times that's a deferred design requirement that they would hire a structural engineer to design the stair, put their seal on it, and provide calculations, and then we review it for compliance with our documents. Make sure it meets code.
Is that the same, like, within landscape architecture and geology?
Not so much in landscape architecture.
No.
There aren't as many shop drawings. On architecture.
Shop drawings are more particular to, you know, mechanical, structural, plumbing.
Details.
Even electrical,
right.
Architectural items.
Okay. And is that different from, like, the engineering plans, too? I mean, do engineers stamp shop drawings, too?
Once in a while, but not nearly as much as with architecture.
Okay.
Engineering doesn't have... A lot of times with some of the architecture, the plans are fairly general, and the shop drawings are specific with whatever brand that, or whatever certain make.
Okay.
That contractor is choosing to use.
Okay. Interesting.
Mr. Chair?
No, I guess the answer... Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, as I read Mr. Neal's request here, he says, is there a state statute requiring? And it seems to me the answer to that is no. And
that would be my understanding.
Mm-hmm. What you're saying, Ed, is that it's up to the architect, individual architects, whether they wish to affix their review stamp to the shop drawings or not.
Yeah.
That would be part of the specifications, whether or not that would be required too. Could be part of the specifications.
I guess, Melissa, to get back to Neil, there's no statute that requires it, and there's also no statute that prevents it.
Okay.
Right.
And it's just the standard by which you hope to practice that you stamp them.
It's your own professional practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
But not everybody needs to, because it's not required for minimum competence, right?
Tell Neil that he's required to stamp my shop drawing.
Okay. Ed says, Neil has to...
But Neil would have to find his stamp first.
Yeah.
and tell him he's going to be disappointed because it really wasn't a very spirited discussion.
Okay. Hopefully he'll remember he sent the question to us. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, let's go to C. Submitted question regarding land surveyor exceptions regarding ADOT-related surveys.
And just so you know, I also received additional material this morning for this agenda item. I have already included in this packet. I believe they are just examples of surveys that the submitter had issues with or concerns.
Mm-hmm. So does the submitter, has he said he wants to submit a complaint?
He has not.
Uh-huh.
He just submitted this material and had us discuss it. He couldn't make it. He just was busy, but this is the materials that he has sent.
Okay.
If I may ask it, is there a rule that says that ADOT, anyone working or surveying for ADOT is immune or...
No.
Okay.
Well, Yuri has to be registered.
Well, this has, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, the way I read this, it has to do with whether or not there's a requirement that these surveys be filed with the recorder. And as I understand, and I'm not a surveyor, so I could very much be incorrect about this, but as my recollection is that it is required that surveyors file their surveys for mm-hmm. recording. So it would apply whether it was for ADOT or whoever it was for.
Right.
Mr. Leeds again, I feel that filing those surveys could be very beneficial down the line
yep.
to others or even to the initial filer. I don't know why they wouldn't.
So I would think the answer to this is that there's no exception, that it's expected that surveyors would record their surveys. However, without a complaint
yeah.
being issued, there's really no board action here, as I see it. Is that correct?
That's kind of where I looked at the issue. Jason, do you want to add anything?
No, I don't have anything to add at this point. I don't see a lot here.
Okay. So what we can do is encourage Mr. Folkers to submit a complaint if he knows of any of these surveys that should have been filed and weren't. Would that be satisfactory yeah. to the committee?
Yeah. But
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
About half a dozen right here.
Yeah.
Anything else on this one?
Nope.
Okay, let's go to 5D. School Facilities Board question regarding whether contractors and or unlicensed designers can design public schools.
Under 3,000 square feet, 19 occupants.
But what about the public works statute?
Public works statutes require registering on everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's a pretty simple answer.
Yeah. This
now,
where
I don't understand the gist of their question, where it could come in is if they want to put together, if a district wants to put together a design-build request for qualifications where the contractors generally are the lead because they have the bonding capacity, they would still be required to hire an architect to design the school under the design-build arrangement, and that's perfectly legal, in my opinion.
Say that one more
time,
Ed.
So, the only place where it could be, maybe the gist of their question is, you know, under, can they do a design-build scenario, and where the contractor is actually the lead, but they hire, and they hire the architect under their team, so there's a single contract with the school district through a contractor, but that contractor would still be, because it's still public works, would still be required by statute to hire a registered architect to
right.
do
yeah.
the design work. So it's still not a, there's no, I don't really understand the question. It's pretty clear to me.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Leeds again, it seems to me that the question here is whether a design-build firm using their own in-house architect has to be registered as an architectural firm unless they use an outside architect. It looks as if the design-build, the contractor himself, has his own architect and has to... and is submitting plans from a registered architect, but not a registered firm. Now, I think this is a firm issue that the question is
well,
about.
Well, it could be. I didn't look at it that way, but that could be a good point, although I know of at least two contractors in the state who have architects on staff, and they are registered with the board, because I checked.
Hmm. So you think as long as the architect's registered and they're working for an unregistered firm, it's okay?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I don't know of any contractors who are of that opinion. Like I said, the two contractors I know of in the state have architects on staff. They offer architectural design build services, and they are registered with our board.
For providing architectural services.
For providing mm-hmm. architectural services.
Yeah, see, I think in this case, the contractor is not licensed with this board. They're just, you know.
Well, maybe do we need to look at some kind of a substantive policy statement that would say if you're offering design build services and you have an architect on your, you're a general contractor with an architect on your staff, you have to also register your company with the board because you're offering architectural services.
Yeah.
I believe that's the question.
Mm-hmm. And I think, so maybe what we need to do is look at developing a substantive policy statement that would clarify that.
And making sure that it is a new regulation or a new...
Correct.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Basically, we just need a clarification of our firm registration.
What do you think, Scott?
Statute and rules.
I would have to take a look at that. I haven't really dug into that specific issue, but I'd be more than happy to take a look
great.
At it and come back with...
Yeah.
That would
okay.
be great, Scott. Thank you.
Sounds good.
And we had another
Chair,
question.
I mean, all we have, I believe, is this audio file where the gentleman is describing what his concerns are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not entirely clear that I understand what his concerns are. And I'm wondering if it would be useful to have him put it in writing.
Well, I can tell you I spoke to the gentleman who's the new director of the school facilities board, and he's an architect and he is registered, and he called and said, I can't get legal advice from my AG that says the person who designs the school needs to be registered. And I said, well, look at the statute. The public works statute requires a registrant. Can you write that for me? And I said, no, I can't issue you an advisory opinion. You have to get your AG, so come to the public meeting and you can address the board about it, and we'll put it on the L&R committee, and you can come and hear the discussion, and maybe that will help you. Well, can you have your AG call my AG? And I said, sure, I can have my AG call your AG, but I don't know how that's going to help you get your opinion. So that's really why this is here, because he knows the answer, but he wanted it written down.
Well, I guess my concern is that as the L&R committee, what are we going to recommend to the board? I mean, I'm not clear what we're recommending to the board.
Well,
maybe everyone else
after,
is. Maybe I'm the only one that's not.
After Melissa's clarification, I would suggest that it goes back to the person from the school facilities board, and that he needs to get an opinion out of his AG rep.
Leave
it at that, rather than us coming up with, we don't have to come up with something that's already kind of a given. Why why muddy the water?
Okay.
I agree with you. This is Jason Foose.
So, I agree as well.
Sounds like we have a consensus on this one. Okay. Then let's go.
Mr. Chair, if I may interrupt and impose, is it possible for us to revisit 5B momentarily?
The Neil issue?
The shop drawing one?
I'm sorry, 5C. It would be the survey issue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we'll go back to 5C.
I appreciate that. I just pulled up, because I'm at my desk, I did pull up ARS 33-105, and I'd like to just point out to the committee that we have A that says the land surveyor shall file a record of survey with the county recorder within 90 days, basically. Then there's an item 1 under that that says a material discrepancy based on the accuracy requirement of the current survey in whole or in part does not appear on any map or previously recorded or filed with the county recorder, county engineer, highway division of the Department of Transportation, or the United States Bureau of Land Management. I think we might need to look at that in depth before we make a recommendation, because that may, I'm not sure if that says that if somebody files something with the county engineer, highway division, or the BLM, that they don't have to file it with the recorder.
Well, how does that, we all felt that the survey should be filed, completed by a registrant, and filed as a benefit to the public, so there wouldn't be an exemption for ADOT employees. Does this change that decision or enhance it?
Well, it might reference that the county recorder is not the only place that a survey can be deposited.
Okay.
Okay.
It's a little bit contradictory, and
okay.
When you read the big A part, it says file it with the recorder. Then you have this subsection here that says, except for if it's filed with the county recorder, engineer, highway division, Department of Transportation, or BLM. Mm. But it also says, when the survey discloses a material discrepancy.
Okay, so it might not have been filed with the recorder. It might just be filed at Department of Transportation, right, which you're saying could satisfy the statute's requirements?
It might. I mean, it identifies something that's filed with three other agencies other than the recorder, three public agencies.
Hmm.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if maybe this ought to come back to the committee at a subsequent meeting. We're talking about now looking in detail at the rules or the statutes and trying to decide what they mean. I'm wondering if this is, and I'm not looking at it, and I'm wondering if this is something that Mr. Foose, would you be willing to put together an analysis for the committee to review
a white paper
before submitting, going back to the board with it, or how do you suggest we proceed?
Well, I'm looking at this. Where there might be confusion, so maybe some kind of white paper from me would work. Something brief. I could probably wrap something up in a page or two, and I'd certainly be willing to do that.
It would certainly be helpful to me in coming to, you know, coming to a resolution on what we want to recommend to the board.
Okay.
We have, Mr. Leach here, we have several surveys submitted as examples. I'm not sure if they were examples of surveys not recorded or what they are. Wouldn't it be wise for us to go back to the gentleman who gave us these surveys and ask him to do the research on this to see whether or not those surveys were filed with ADOT or some other organization? And maybe this issue might just disappear.
Jason, Dr. Mr. Chair, am I allowed to participate?
Yeah.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Okay. Jason, in the section A of it, it qualifies by saying, first it says you have to file this land survey with the recorder's office within 90 days, and then it says if you find a material discrepancy based on accuracy requirements, and that has not been reflected anywhere else in the county recorders, county engineers, highway division, or Department of Transportation. So only if there's a material discrepancy does that qualifier of if it's previously recorded, but it says regardless, you have to file that record survey if you establish points or lines relating to a land boundary or property. So it's just saying that the only time that if it's not recorded or reflected somewhere else, then you wouldn't have to file a record survey, period. But if there's that challenge, then you have to file a record of survey. Does that make sense?
I can see that. I also see that there's an acknowledgement that there's other places that things can be recorded. And so I'm confused at this point. I mean, I normally take the big print and follow the big print and go to the recorder's office. So for what it's worth, that would be at least my standard of care. But
well, I think we're in the habit of recording all the surveys. Any survey that we do, we file a record of survey. But I guess this statement is saying that you really only have to file a record of survey if you find something different from what's already previously recorded in these several other locations. But if your survey corresponds to something that's recorded in any one of these other locations, then technically you don't have to file a record of survey because it's already recorded somewhere.
Excuse me, if I can cut in, sorry, Scott Donald. I think at this point we're getting pretty far down interpreting this. This probably would be best put off till next meeting so we can make sure all the committee members have the materials and they're able to look at all the materials at the same time, just to make sure everybody knows exactly what you're talking about. I think we're getting a little into stuff that wasn't originally provided in depth to the committee members.
And isn't shown in the letter.
Right.
Yeah.
So with that, Mr. Chair, I will take up the task of collecting more information and presenting it to the committee at the next meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jason.
Let's go to
Mr. Chairman. Just one minor clarification, perhaps. I thought I heard Melissa refer to this as an issue of where the surveyors were employed by ADOT. And the way I read the letter, it's not surveyors that are employed by ADOT, but it's contractors.
Okay.
Just to be clear, that's... Mm-hmm.
Firms contracted with ADOT.
Yeah, right.
And some of those firms contract with licensed surveyors.
Yeah.
But they're not employees of the state or employees which are typically exempt, at least from our statutes, at least from being registered anyway, if they're employed... by the state or then they're not required to be registered.
Wait. Yes. If you're employed by the ADOT and you're doing land surveying, you are required to work under a registrant or be a registrant.
All right. Well, maybe I misinterpreted that. I was under the impression that
on the federal side, yes. On the state side, no.
Well, I guess I'm more familiar with geology, but there are many geologists that work for the state that don't have to be registered. to do work for the state, on state projects. At least that's my understanding.
Are they taking responsibility for the project, or are they working under the direction of someone at ADOT or DO, Department of Water Resources?
Well, I'm thinking of people like in Department of Environmental Quality or in the Water Resources, mm-hmm. Department of Water Resources. They employ geologists, mm-hmm. and they do geological analysis of things that are submitted to them, and they're not required to be registered.
I don't know the answer to that.
But it's an answer we can find out.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mean to complicate the issue that we were discussing. Mm-hmm.
Before that issue gets complicated, let's go to item E. Update regarding the board's proposed rules.
Sure, this is Ed Murray. I've got to jump off here pretty soon.
Okay.
I only had one issue with the rules package, because it's pretty much, as I understand, we've had minimal comments, if any, from the public, and it looks pretty much like what we adopted at our initial meeting has moved us forward and what the board sent on. The only concern I have is on page 94 of 181 in our packet. It's under preliminary summary of the economic, small business, and consumer impact. The bottom of that page, it says, the amendment to R43301 allows the board to consider all criminal convictions of a serious nature when determining unprofessional conduct. The amendment may result in additional discipline or registrants that is necessary to adequately protect public health, safety, and welfare. Melissa, any thoughts on how that might raise a flag if Senate Bill 1436 passes?
Well, I think Senate Bill 1436 has that lovely language which says, notwithstanding any other provision in law, it would clearly supersede what we're putting into our rules if it passes.
Okay. That was the only thing I raised, that I wanted to make sure we weren't putting a target on our back.
No, I don't think any more than normal.
Then I'm good.
Any other comments on the proposed rules changes?
No, we need
one typo.
A typo?
We got a typo on number 12, good moral character. You struck out an A that shouldn't have been struck out as all.
What page are you on?
I'm still looking.
95?
Is it that far down? It's,
we can run the spell check.
It's in number 12. So I referred it to.
There's number 12 on page 7 of the rules package, page 98, the bottom of the good moral character.
That's the one.
Okay.
You number just struck out at the letter A that probably should remain.
Okay, so the committee knows the time for comment. Came and went, and we had a comment by the Home Inspector Rules and Standards Committee. It was basically a clerical change, which we are making. The rules went before the board at the last meeting, and the board acknowledged and accepted the change from as recommended by the Home Inspector Committee, and voted to send the rules package to GIRC with the economic impact statement, which is required. So staff's been in the process of drafting that economic impact statement, and as soon as it's finalized, we will be submitting the rules package to GIRC, and their timeframes will then kick in according to when they schedule it to be heard, and their critical review of the rules will probably take place before that. So I'm not sure what their deadlines are these days, since that organization has changed pretty significantly since our current governor came into this situation.
Okay. We've taken care of that. Let's go to future agenda items.
So my notes indicate we want to carry forward the filing surveys issue. So that's 5C.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else? The committee wants to review.
I thought we wanted to carry D also with the school.
Oh, the school. Do you want an update on school facilities board, or was there just direction to me to tell?
Did you determine he needs to go back to his own AG? Is that it?
Well, I thought that was the committee decision.
Yeah.
AG
needed to
figure out. I apologize. That's right.
No, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's confusing with all these AGs.
I know. All these, they run amok.
Yeah, we do.
I know.
Good use of the word amok.
Okay. Anything else you want to see as a committee? Do you want a further rules update or a substantive policy statement to write?
I think that substantive policy thing on the engineering side could be discussed in a future LNR meeting. Any other things? Future meetings?
I think we'll just set it as we need it.
Okay.
Let's hope that we meet more often than annually.
Well, I think even for rules.
Yes.
And Mr. Brady, I want to thank you for stepping in and chairing the meeting for me.
Glad to do it, Ed. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
No move. Ed.
Seconded. Peter.
All in favor?
Aye.
Adjourn.
Aye. All right, folks. See you
thank
later.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.